Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Speaking of sports, did you watch the National Championship College football game last night?
You know, I watched three quarters of it, and of course, Georgia just dominated.
Right. I was but this close to turning it off.
I just had a feeling that, college football, anything happens. And I woke up this morning to find out it did.
I felt so bad. I was rooting for Georgia.
So Alabama won? Are you telling me I was right?
Did you tape it? Oh, I see what you're doing.
That's what this is about.
You're bragging over there.
Are you telling me I was right?
I guess you were. I felt so bad for the kicker from Alabama who missed the field goal. I mean, I should have been happy because that sent it into overtime. That gave Georgia another chance to win. I was rooting against Alabama, but I always have a soft spot in my heart for field goal kickers. That's just the most surreal existence. All the other players are so wrapped up in the moment. You're hitting, you're blocking, you're tackling. If you have a good player, bad player, you get up and you do it again, and you do it again, and you do it again. And field goal kickers just sit there on the sidelines and kick into that little net and try and look athletic. And then they're called into, with the whole world watching, perform a task unrelated to everything else that just happened. And the fortune of the team and the state and the world rests on your foot. Oh, that's no pressure, kid.
But if you think about it another way, they only have one thing to do.
Yeah. No, I don't think. I don't know. Well, I do a little bit. I was a field goal kicker in high school and for one year in junior college.
I don't think there's a major sport that could go either way the way college football can. You know? I mean, that can just turn on a dime like college football can.
Okay.
You know, it's not going to happen in NCAA basketball by and large. The better teams are going to win.
That's fair enough, Steve. That's fair enough. But I also thought you were going to say, I don't think that any major sport has an opportunity like I just described for a field goal kicker. It would be as though you play basketball for four quarters, the score is tied, and at the very end you bring somebody else out on the team who hasn't played yet, and he has to do something that isn't what everybody else just did. I don't even know what that would be. It wouldn't even be a free throw. It would be something more arcane than a free throw. You know, and if he can do that, throw the hoop over the ring into the goal, you know, with his left hand blindfolded.
It's a bounce shot. He's got to make a bounce shot.
Right. He's got to make a trick shot. Then it wins. And they go, well, that's all you've got to do, dude, is make this. You've only got to make one thing. It's that silly trick shot. But that's not how it should be. Or as it is that way, what an immense pressure that is for that kid. Basketball doesn't have the equivalent of that. Maybe baseball does with a closer or a pinch hitter.
Not only that, and then they tend not to like you.
Right.
You know, you don't have the respect that the running back does or the receiver.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, coaches, in my limited experience, 5 years of football, right? But they kind of joked about not liking the kicker because kickers do one of two things. They do what they're supposed to do or they screw it up. That's the attitude they have about kickers. And so that poor kid comes out there and he misses.
But the circumstances are always the same for him, whereas every other player, it changes on a dime, depending on the play, depending on the situation, depending on their location.
Well, it's not really the same. I mean, you've got this hash mark or that. You've got distance. You've got wins. You've got.
But you've got one thing to do. One thing to do.
You practice that one thing from different distances.
So when you saw that kid,
high pressure.
When you saw Miss Georgia, when you saw that kid line that kick up, you thought, oh, well, this is so easy. I could do it. Is that what you're telling us?
No, I didn't even watch it. I'm just saying.
Because maybe if you'd been in that moment, you would have said, hokey smokes, or whatever it is you say.
It's definitely hokey smokes. That's what I say at times of high pressure.
So the law on marijuana has not changed, but the federal government now says that they're going to start to enforce it, which is a change. Isn't it strange? And maybe it's a little bit akin to what we do with immigration policy in this country. We say that you have to be documented or else you're here illegally, and yet people will stand up at rallies and say, I'm an illegal, what are you going to do about it? And we don't do anything about it. But think about what happens with marijuana laws, where the states have laws that regulate and legalize it, like Colorado recreationally or Illinois medicinally, and yet every ounce of that is against the federal law. And the federal law, because of an Obama-era policy, said, okay, we're not going to enforce it. We're just going to let it be. Still, when you make money, say, as a medical marijuana retailer, if you're working at one of those shops, you don't put your money in a bank because that's federally regulated, and the banks don't want to have anything to do with it. They don't want to be in trouble with federal regulators, so they don't take your cash. So they have literally cardboard boxes full of 20s and hundreds trying to figure out what to do with it.
Well, not only that, they're at risk because the bad guys know that they've always got cash around. Because
yeah,
they can't
absolutely.
Take credit cards or checks. They've got to take cash.
Absolutely. That's a bad idea. But you know, here's the thing. Okay, so then the federal government should do what? Change the law? Maybe. But in the absence of that, I've never been a fan of having laws you don't enforce. If it's the law that marijuana is illegal, then Colorado should not be allowed to sell it. Because to me, that's against the law. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's not just to you. It is. It's against the law.
Okay, so here's Chris Lindsay. He's the senior legislative counsel for the Marijuana Policy Project. He's pro states' rights on this. He wants Illinois to be able to sell it medicinally, at least, and the rest to be left alone. He works with lawmakers in this state on this very topic. Hi, Chris. It's John, and you're on WGN Radio in Chicago. How are you?
Very good. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
So jump into this conversation. Having heard all of that, what do you want to say first?
Well, I guess I would start by saying that, boy, how unproductive and harmful is this statement? You know, here we are in the midst of working with states all around the country as they ramp up regulations. For the first time, law enforcement has basically transparent access into companies that cultivate, process, test, transport cannabis. These are all the types of entities that get regulated by state regulators now in Illinois and many, many other states. So here comes the federal government saying, you know what? We're not comfortable with that. We could go after any one of y'all. And so that's terrible news for anybody that's really working hard at trying to do this. It's great news if you're in a legalization state and you're part of the underground market, because that means that your legal competition now better be scared. Incredibly counterproductive.
What is the federal government going to do, though? I mean, all we've had is words so far from Jeff Sessions. And by the way, the president on the campaign trail, I clicked through on this today on at least three separate occasions, asked specifically about this issue. Donald Trump, as candidate, said it's a states' rights issue. We shouldn't get involved. But now that that's evidently changed, what do you think the government's going to do?
Right. Well, yeah, you're right. That is a complete reversal from what we've heard from then-candidate Trump. But, you know, what is the state going to do? What can it do? Well, it can introduce this whole new layer of uncertainty. You know, it was the case that if you had a state like Illinois that had a very, very regulated system and you complied with those regulations, then you could have some measure of comfort that the federal government wasn't going to come knocking on your door.
Mm-hmm.
I think that certainly, and I want to be clear on this, certainly when it comes to medical marijuana, this statement that Sessions put out last week is not going to change that equation. And that's because of actions that Congress has already taken to protect medical marijuana states and the businesses that operate them. What is at risk would really be the legalization type activities that are out there. And to your point, what can the federal government do? Is it going to march into these highly regulated businesses? They're often highly supported by their communities. The local governments are getting taxes. They're paying for programs. Is the DEA going to go in and start raiding these businesses when you've got, you know, illegal cartels growing on federal lands?
So
this just seems kind of nonsensical.
The statement from the Attorney General said then that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that he would leave it up to each individual U.S. attorney. So let's go to California, where I don't know how many different judicial districts there are different U.S. attorneys, but any one of them in the state could then begin to take action, or the same in Colorado or I think Oregon. Have you heard from any of those attorneys general any indication that they might do that?
There have been, the most that we hear would just simply be kind of the plain vanilla, we will enforce federal law. So it doesn't say, okay, folks, get ready, it's coming. It tends to be on the sort of generic type boilerplate language you might hear from lawyers or prosecutors.
Yeah, but I think you would only need one activist, one angry mom whose kid got caught up in the spiral of drugs to say, I live in Colorado, this is crap, the government now said this is illegal, and the government now said they're going to enforce it. I could just, do you see what I'm saying? Don't you see how that could spiral into action that maybe even that attorney general doesn't want, but his boss said you need to do?
Yeah, there are some U.S. attorneys, in particular in Colorado, that have said, look, we're not changing our policy. This is working here. And it's exactly for the reasons I laid out. You've got transparent businesses that are engaged in this, and the black market's moving out. It's been drastically reduced since all this stuff happened. That's a win for Colorado. What's the U.S. attorney going to do? Create more upheaval and a market for on the underground to move in? It's really just kind of a ridiculous situation to expect U.S. attorneys to somehow tear down the regulations that are actually going up right now.
Well, what should happen with the regulations, Chris? I mean, then do you support at least what Jeff Sessions said in principle? Let the local U.S. attorneys decide if they're going to prosecute it. And locally, they have a feel for it. And if, as you said, it's working, maybe they won't and should not. But maybe if it's disintegrating, maybe they should. Should that control be ceded to the states, as Sessions said?
Well, it should be ceded to the states. The issue is all the maybes that you just included in that whole description, and that's the problem. We need to get rid of the question marks and all of the sort of the uncertainties. So here is what my proposal would be. We've got an amendment that's already been adopted by Congress that protects places like Illinois. The Department of Justice, the DEA could not run into Illinois and start raiding businesses that are following state law because of the work that Congress has done. It's called the Rohrabacher-Farr Amendment. And as long as that's in place, we're in good shape in Illinois and other places that have medical. What we want is to see Congress adopt a similar measure that includes also the legalization states. And that's referred to as the McClintock-Polis Amendment. And so what my organization and others are doing right now is working very hard to encourage Congress to adopt the McClintock-Polis Amendment and give all of these states the additional protections they need. We get rid of the question marks. We know exactly where we stand. That's very important.
Yeah. Well, wasn't the Rohrabacher, though, isn't that amendment subject to change? I mean, it's only temporary and has to be renewed. And I think the renewal is up right around now, isn't
right,
it?
Right, right. And March, I think, is the final date for it.
That's right. It does need to be renewed. We think that there's going to be that renewal coming. What we want to see is the additional protections put in place. Now, let's say that those protections don't happen. I'm talking my wish list here. I still don't think the federal government's going to go after anybody for all of the reasons that we've said. We may have a random U.S. attorney engage in some random activities around the country, but really history is moving on. I just don't think Sessions and others like him really know that yet.
Well, I also suppose he's working for a law and order boss. I mean, it's not inconsistent with the tone and rhetoric of this administration to say and try and do something like this. A, it is the law. B, we don't like lawbreakers. Ask El Salvadorans. And C, if we think that somehow drug use is connected to crime, then we ought to shore that up, whatever that means. So give me a reaction to that in a minute. On a phone line is Chris Lindsay. He's the senior legislative counsel for the Marijuana Policy Project. He works with Illinois lawmakers on this sort of thing, and we're wondering what Jeff Sessions' comments mean for you and for me. Here we only have medicinal. He thinks we're pretty insulated. Final question for our guest. Chris, just talk to me for a second about the complication of it's against the federal law. This is a law and order administration. So what are they supposed to do with regard to marijuana sales?
Well, they're also a states' rights administration that's talked about the value of letting citizens decide for themselves what's best. And so that's what we think the federal government should do under the circumstances. Reality is that these regulations are working. Why would the federal government intervene now?
I'm going to call you again probably in a week or so. We'll just see, you know, when the next sort of wrinkle in all of this unfolds. Because so far we've seen no action, just some rhetoric. But I know you're tapped in on this. And we appreciate your work and your time this afternoon, Chris.
Thanks very much.
Chris Lindsay is the Senior Legislative Counsel for the Marijuana Policy Project. He's the one that's trying to help Illinois lawmakers make sense of this.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
And by the way,
here's John Williams.
Already thought one in the previous hour. So this could be a two big thought show. It's 2:09. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We're here until 3 o'clock. Remember, tomorrow we do this show from the Museum of Broadcast Communications. It's on State Street, right downtown Chicago. They have an exhibit for Saturday Night Live. The SNL Experience is there now. You get to see the Celebrity Jeopardy set, the Weekend Update desk, more costumes and props. It really is a walk down memory lane for so many of us. And we should be there. And so we're going to be again tomorrow. Who else is already? All the shows are going to take a tour of there. I don't know that Rose has been. Have you guys been over there with Rose show yet? Or is it just Cochran that's been over there?
I believe it's just been Steve. But we are doing a show from there. I hope I can tease this. In a couple weeks. I believe the 26th, January 26th, the Rocancho will be out there.
I've seen the stuff. And it's really not, it's impressive. You know, I don't know if a museum of broadcasting is going to get people in their cars, but I think this SNL thing does.
It's all over social media. Everybody's posting about it. So yeah. I think there's definitely a buzz about it.
It's pretty cool. We'll be there tomorrow. You want to join us? Let's light up the phones again. We took a bunch of calls during the news. We'll take five more calls. If you didn't get in, you can right now. 312-981-7200. You'll get to watch us do our show. And if that's not enough, you'll also be able to walk around the exhibit there at the museum. It's from 1 to 3 tomorrow.
Promise me you won't do any imitations.
1 to 3 tomorrow.
I don't want to hear you being like Garth or anything like that.
I'll do Pat. I'll do the ladies man.
I said promise me you won't.
Trying to think of all of the SNL characters that all of us could just drop in a hat.
That's probably about all of them right there.
Yeah, my range is limited. Well, anyway, that's tomorrow. So call right now if you can go. Don't take them if you can't. But if you can and want to join us, we'll take your call right now. 312-981-7200. Elif, I know you're answering the phones over there, but I want you to hit a couple buttons for me. So before you do all of that, let's just do this. I am the sort of adult in the room when it comes to criticizing Donald Trump. I think he gets what he's due, but I think we should not be distracted by unnecessary criticisms, and here is one of them. So last night at the National Championship College football game, the president was criticized widely on Twitter for not knowing the words to the national anthem. He was lipping and singing along to the national anthem. You can watch it online if you didn't see it live last night on TV. And there are some parts where he knows Rockets Red Glare. And there are other times where he just kind of looks down at his shoes the way all of us do when we forget words to the national anthem. I guarantee you, if I dropped a microphone in front of 10 people, 7 of them would not be able to sing the song flawlessly.
How many of them would be president of the country?
So here's the other reason he may have had trouble with that last night. Elif, this is not the crowd reaction to him walking, but this is the Rascal Flatts singing. If you were on the field, this is what it sounded like. Hear how echoey it is? You've got the crowd reacting, you're trying to sing, it's bouncing back, and so you're like, hails! Quick, what's the next line?
Sounds like they're singing it in a round.
It does, so I can see where a person knowing that they're being watched, would be a little off put by their ability to keep up with the band.
But what about not singing along at all and just standing there respectfully?
That's what I would have done. I would have gone all in or not at all. You know, I don't think there's any disrespect by putting your hand over your heart or standing at attention with your hands to your side. Just strike some attentive pose and you're good. You're good. But it's that in and out thing. It's that in and out thing. Because he'd hit the easy lines, but the tricky ones,
okay, but
he wasn't there for.
Okay, going along with what you're saying, though.
This is not important,
He didn't know at the start that it was going to be like they were singing in the round, probably.
Right, so maybe he kicked it off.
I agree, it's not important.
Thank you.
I think it's funny the way he walked in, though.
He walked in with a bunch of cadets or ROTC officers. You know, they look like students who are in military uniforms. And the president walked in with a bunch of young men that I saw. I presume there were women there, too. And then he did his version of the song. I was also interested in sort of interpreting the reaction he got. Remember when, hell, I don't know, when's the last time we saw a governor stick their neck out? Well, for instance, if the mayor or the governor go to a Blackhawks rally or a Cubs rally,
yeah,
and everybody's there, we're all having a good time, and then, please welcome Rod Blagojevich, Jim Thompson, right. Paul Ryan, you know, then they get booed.
Right.
And so, you hate to be conspicuously absent. Where was the governor? But you're not adding anything to those programs, and you're going to get booed. Maybe there's a state where the governor steps up, and people just genuinely say, thank you for being our governor.
Yeah, it's Colorado. Colorado, they do that, but they're high. We know they're stoned now.
No, really, did they do that for Mike Pence? Did they do that for whoever the governors are of our neighboring states? I don't know. I don't know, but I would try and avoid that at all costs if I were them, because it's embarrassing. It hurts my feelings when that happens. So here is the president of the United States, the most polarizing figure in the history of American governance. And he walks out before the national championship game to this. Hey. Stop it. Start it again, Elif. My question to you is, listen to this. Is this cheering or this booing? Where is your meter on this? Boy, it sure is something, isn't it?
It is something.
that is polarized, is what that is. Because some people are saying hooray, and some people are not.
But I almost don't hear either.
I know. I think it's a blend.
Right.
It's 49% is what you're getting there.
But so my point was, do you ever recall a president walking in? I mean, you know, presidents go to championship games or they go, but they usually sit in a box or they sit in their seats. I guess the closest thing would be if you throw out the first pitch, you go out to the mound and do that.
Which the president didn't do at the World Series.
But in this case, he it was like he was carrying the Olympic torch.
Wait a minute. He didn't get a chance to do it at the World Series. What was the game that the president declined the opportunity most presidents take? I don't remember. Keep going, Steve. It seemed to me like there was one where...
It was the Army-Navy game. No, he went to that, didn't he? The Army-Navy game? Anyway. So
it was a baseball game, but he was not president for that.
And he's been president for a year. He was sworn in January.
January?
Of a year ago. We're coming up on the anniversary.
No. His microphone's on and he's talking on the radio.
Yeah.
So he was president for the last World Series.
Yeah, he was.
Okay, keep going.
But I don't ever recall, because of that or whatever, I mean, he did like it was parade-like, where he came in.
I saw him waving.
He walked down, you know, maybe it was 100 yards or 75 yards, and he's waving to everyone. I've never seen a president do that at a sporting event. It was kind of, you know, fun.
I don't know. Yeah, I suppose.
Well, I mean, it was
great theater.
We talk about so many things that this guy does that no one has ever done or
Absolutely.
Doesn't usually do. And that was one of them. Just sort of soaking it in, waving as he walked.
And, you know, if a president I liked or an immensely popular president that most people liked had done that, I don't suppose it would be...
It still would have been the first time they'd ever done it.
But I don't know that it would be cause for this conversation. For instance, I think the reason he did that is not just because he wanted to soak up some adulation, but also because the players who were not on the field, but the NFL players have famously been taking a knee. Not so many anymore, but that's been the issue. Here is the president's first legitimate reason to be on a football field and show them how it's done. So the president stands for the national anthem. This is how it's done. kids. And by the way, Fox News, in their coverage of it, shows Trump standing on the field with his hand over his heart. In fact, the RNC tweeted this out of him singing where he was in sync with the words. And it said, President Trump stands for the national anthem. That was under breaking news on Fox last night. I think it was more than just, hey, isn't it great we're at a football game? I think it was very much a statement that you may endorse. You know, I mean, maybe more power to you, President. That's exactly when and how you should have done it.
But he could have been doing that. I guess it would be different if he was in the stand standing than if he's on the field where the football players kneel.
Yeah, right. Maybe so. Maybe so. Wouldn't have been the center of attention, though. Now, what he has is if, in fact, I don't know if this is true. Maybe, Kevin, you can vouch for me on this. But I heard that he wanted to actually put on a uniform and quarterback for Georgia. Now, are you hearing that as well?
Well, I was hearing he's so good that he could have quarterbacked for both teams. And all he could have thrown the ball to himself. That's what some people are saying. But I can't exactly confirm that part of it. But that was a report. That came out of Atlanta.
I didn't hear that. Yeah. I would say Kellyanne Conway, I believe, had that. You know how, like, when you're a dad and you're playing with all the kids and you're the permanent quarterback and then you promise to disperse the ball evenly to all the kids rather than let one kid quarterback because you're the best at it. You're the big dad. Maybe that was it.
Something like that.
Yeah. Something like that. Which then does lead us to the Oprah Winfrey fallout. So today is the first day that the newspapers all had a chance to sort of tell you what they thought about Oprah Winfrey.
It's Madam President Winfrey to you, by the way.
Here's Neil Steinberg in the Sun-Times today. She would absolutely do it, said Stedman Graham, Oprah's perpetual escort. I had to laugh at that description. What is Stedman Graham to Oprah Winfrey? He is Oprah's perpetual escort. Of course she would. Right, Steinberg. Everyone wants to be president. It's the biggest affirmation life can bestow. The question should be, would she be any good as president? And if your answer is better than Donald Trump, I'm sorry, that's not good enough. And then he gives you all the reason why she wouldn't be that good at it. Maybe a super rich, egomaniacal ex-TV star with no experience in government and only a passing relationship with reality might not be the best candidate. Oprah's a control freak. She's famous as a control freak. You can't deliver her morning coffee without signing away your First Amendment rights. How do you think that secretive personality would transmit to our supposedly transparent government? Ever look at a copy of O, the magazine? Who's on the cover this month? Oprah Winfrey. Who was on the cover last month? Oprah Winfrey. Gee, didn't Oprah endorse a bunch of snake oil salesmen too, like Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz? Didn't she flog
the... I say state and Health and Human Services right there.
That's right. Your Health and Human Services Secretary, please welcome Dr. Oz!
This is an aside, Barry.
I value the press more than ever before, she said in her speech. Speaking your truth is the most powerful truth we have. Steinberg writes... My truth is this, electing Oprah Winfrey president would not end our national disaster, but deepen it. The Chicago Tribune said, we are anticipating this with glee. That's the editorial position of the newspaper. They said she could play both roles. She's a celebrity and she is a policy wonk. The Tribune said, as for Oprah Winfrey as a possible candidate, we'll say the same thing we've said about many episodes of her show, she's worth watching. The Wall Street Journal said this today, Oprah's name recognition equals Donald Trump's. We'd guess that the popular midday talk show host's approval rating is at least double that of the sitting president. Among women, he'd never match her support. Like him, she could run as an outsider when many voters are still hostile to the political class. Miss Winfrey would likely run a campaign based more on personality, suffused with positive energy, than on, say, climate change. And with a net worth estimated at nearly $3 billion, she'd have to she'd give a rest to Democratic donors tapped out by the Clintons. And they say this, by the way, contrary to current Democratic dogma, if you've got a business, you did not build that. Oprah really did build that real wealth herself. Remember Hillary Clinton was saying on the campaign trail about how we need government regulation and how we all help the businesses. They don't do it on their own. So when they say, I did this, actually, we kind of helped you do that, said Ms. Clinton. And the Wall Street Journal hasn't forgotten that. Mary Mitchell in the Sun-Times today, and Lynn Sweet both give it thumbs up. Mary Mitchell said, here's one good reason she should do it. After a year of being bombarded with pompous tweets and nasty threats, Americans could use some inspiration. And in the Chicago Tribune, here's one last commentator on this. Heidi Stevens acknowledged that she's inspirational. She has been to Heidi Stevens, the Tribune columnist, for years, from when she was a kid in high school and in college. She said, but I hope she doesn't run. I think she deserves better. She deserves better than what Washington's serving these days. I think her gifts would be squandered and squashed in politics. Better that she does what she does, and we all take it to heart, said Heidi Stevens. And hi, Ron, what did you want to say?
Hey, John, I'm going to be real brief. Three quick points. Number one is, if you listen very carefully to the playback of that, you said it doesn't sound, maybe it could be boos or it could be cheers. But if you listen carefully, there are a lot of whistles. And I think the whistles that it's coming through, simple deduction is that there's probably more cheers and whistles than boos.
Hold on a second. Hit it. The description of it I read from people that were there was that it was cheers with a smattering of boos. So okay, you're probably right.
And the second point is, you may have accidentally misspoke, but it was the Zac Brown Band, not Rascal Flatts, that sung the national anthem.
Yeah, I appreciate the heads up on that. Yeah, a couple folks caught that. Thanks for correcting me.
Okay, and that's it, John.
Hey, thanks for calling, Ron. Appreciate the help.
Thank you.
You bet. Bye now. Let's talk to, I think that's Jim on line two. Hey, Jim, you're on the air. What's up?
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was in attendance yesterday when President Trump was at the American Farm Bureau Federation.
Oh, great.
Convention. He put on quite a show. I have to give him credit for that. But one thing that struck me during his talk, at least three, four, maybe even five times, he made the motion similar to what a priest or a minister would use when he wants his congregation to stand up. You know, he would bring his arms up, both arms, as if he wanted him.
All rise, that sort of thing, huh?
So, I thought that was kind of unique.
Where do you farm, Jim? Are you a farmer?
I'm with Cook County Farm Bureau. My operation has been shut down about 6 years because of lack of workers out of our family and the price of land. So,
what'd you do with the land then?
We were in vegetables. We had a fruit and vegetable stand, and put six kids through college with that.
How about that? Oh, I appreciate it.
So we were pretty successful, yes.
And the farmers, the people in attendance there, were supportive of the president? It wasn't a mixed house?
No, I would say that's kind of one of my thoughts during his talk was that there had to be Democrats in attendance, I'm certain. But there didn't seem to be any, pushback from anybody in attendance. All the cheering and stuff was pretty well-rounded. So yeah. I was surprised.
I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad you listened.
He's putting things into the Farm Bureau that we need to support our industry. So,
well, good luck to you guys then. I appreciate the help on that. Thanks for the call, Jim.
Very good. Thanks. Nice talking to you.
Yeah, likewise. He did have the funniest line. I'm not going to be able to quote it now.
The privilege of voting for him?
Yes. Aren't you glad I ran? I gave you the privilege of voting for
me. You're lucky for having the privilege to vote for me.
And, you know, that's him. That I got to tell you, when you watch it, that's his idea of self-deprecation. Not self-deprecation, but that's him being hammy. That's him being jokey. That's him being so over the top. I know this is ridiculous. Wasn't it great you got to vote for me? And then you do cheer for it. So he sort of plays it both ways. But when I heard about that line, I thought, oh, Lord. And then when I saw that line, it wasn't as awful as it sounds.
I was going to say, right, it sounds better than it reads.
Right, or looks better than it sounds. Yeah. Greg Schiller, I'm reading from I think this is in the Wall Street Journal the other day. A man from the suburb of Chicago who opened his basement to the homeless people on a freezing night last month has complied with a local government order to stop. These people are my friends. The man, Greg Schiller, who has worked with the homeless community in Elgin for several years, said, "This is basically the city telling me who I can have over, who my friends can be, and where we can congregate or whether we can in my home." Greg's on line 7. Hi, Greg. It's John. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good. How are you?
I'm real good. Sorry to hear about this for every possible reason. How is it that you work with the homeless? What do you do?
Well, I'm a fairly outspoken advocate for the homeless here in Elgin. I came here from New Mexico specifically to work with the homeless. I planted a 501c3 outreach ministry to serve the homeless. I left that ministry back in August of 2016 and went back out onto the street. I'm a soldier. I like to be out on the street with the people, and I try to raise awareness with the community. I've done things like I've slept in the park with these people and handed out flyers while people were walking around downtown on a Saturday night, mm-hmm. just to try and raise awareness in the community about the homelessness issue and try to get support for it so that we can, you know, there's several people that are falling through the gaps here. And subsequently, on any given night in Elgin, you could have upwards of over 30 to 40 people that have no place to lay their head indoors.
And these are people that you've come to know through, I guess, your advocacy. Are they mentally deranged? Are they addicts? What is it that's got them out
there? There's multiple issues. We've got some that have mental health issues. We have, of course, addiction issues. You know, we get people that, you know, because of a set of circumstances where they, you know, they went through a bad divorce, they weren't in a great emotional state. Because of that, they lost mm-hmm. their job, and they end up homeless that way. There are so many guys that just came out of jail, made a bad decision, and got locked up. They come out of jail a couple of years later. They've got nowhere to go. There's so many reasons why people might end up homeless. Some of them include, you know, some of them are bad life choices. Others are not.
Pardon me. Let me ask you this. Where's your house relative to the neighbors? Did you live in a neighborhood? Are you in the outlying areas of Elgin?
I live just west of downtown Elgin. My neighborhood is very blue collar, and the street that I'm on, it's a main street on a corner of a cul-de-sac, and the cul-de-sac is all Section 8 townhomes.
Tell me about the night that you invited these people over.
Well, I had them over about half a dozen times this winter. I've been doing this for two winter seasons. We'd come down here, and I had cots for them and sleeping bags and pillows and made them comfortable. We'd watch movies all night. Drink hot chocolate, coffee.
So what do you do? Do they know to walk to your place, or do you pick them up in a van?
Yeah, they know where I live. They come here. We also throw barbecues for them in the summertime. I have a whole homeless community over here, and we have a band in the garage. And
I got it.
We have a great time.
So then what happened? How did this rankle? What happened that got you in trouble?
Well, somebody, and we believe it was somebody who has a personal axe to grind with me, reported to Code. And the reason we believe it was somebody who knows us is because Code came with specific information with, you know, numbers of people that were down here
and
where exactly we were in the house. A neighbor that lives nearby wouldn't have that information.
Okay, so somebody, though, has got an axe to grind, but maybe legally speaking, a legitimate one. How many people were in your place when the authorities showed up?
There was no one here when they showed up.
Oh.
I only had them overnight. They came during the day. The basement was empty.
How many people did you have at any given time?
The most I had at one time was 15.
15. And is that the problem? Was it too many people in your house?
No, my basement, according to building code, my basement is not suited for sleeping. There's an exit issue. There's only one main exit in and out of here.
I see.
And the windows are too high off the ground and too small.
So what did they?
So the ceiling is too low.
What did they tell you then?
Well, they told me, they gave me 24 hours to take down the cots and return the basement to, you know, look like a storage area.
Yeah.
And that would be it. And that they came back the next day and they inspected. They took pictures. They saw that I was compliant. And we were done with it.
So have you had anybody stay over since?
No.
What are you going to do about this?
Well, and I'm glad you asked that, because since then the city has reached out to me. Yesterday I sat down with the entire command staff of the Elgin Police Department and the assistant city manager. They wanted to talk to me about working on a solution. They realized there is an issue. There's a big gap here in Elgin, and we need to fix it. And we had a really good kind of open forum meeting, and basically we ended up with, I'm partnered with them. I'm going to help them resolve the situation. For the interim, we're going to see the already existing shelter here says that they are easing restrictions, and they're going to start letting more people in that they previously would have turned away.
I see.
And we're going to see if that works. And anybody that they do turn away, they will be able to stay at the police station in the lobby. The police station for the past 2 years has been closing the lobby at night. They didn't want to staff the lobby in the middle of the night.
It was so cold from Christmas Day to this Saturday. It did not get above 20. We tied the record for deep cold in Chicago. So, I'm sorry to hear that, even if you weren't technically compliant, that they wouldn't look the other way. And you know, the other thing about this, and I'll let you react to this, Greg, is it's my house, damn it. I can have anybody over that I want.
That's the attitude that I had. You know, and I looked at the codes, and the codes allowed for what's called slumber parties. And so I figured, you know, this falls under the slumber party rules.
Sure.
It's all slumber party. We're hanging out. We're watching movies all night.
Yeah.
We're, you know, I've got coffee and hot chocolate going. We've got snacks and food and stuff. And, technically that's what it was. You know, I wasn't running a homeless shelter or anything. Like we already said, I know all these people. It's not like these are strangers.
Yeah.
You know, I've known these are the regulars that couldn't get into the existing shelter, and they need a place to lay their head that was warm and safe.
We need more people.
I tried to provide that.
We need more people like you. If for some reason this case takes a different turn, let us know, Greg. But in the meantime, if there's something we can do for you, you've got our number. Keep up the good work over there. I think your heart's in the right place. I think your head is, too. And I'm really glad that you were able to motivate the people in Elgin. I mean, right, average citizens shouldn't have to have slumber parties for the homeless. There should be some resources.
Where we stand right now is a local business owner has come and offered us a 4,500-foot square foot facility in which to operate a proper shelter in.
Oh, boy. Hey, nice so going, Greg.
Yeah, we're looking at that at that probably by the end of winter.
Huh. Well, I'm glad that it's a little warmer right now, you know, that maybe things aren't as pressing. But as I said, let's stay in touch and keep up the good work, sir.
All right, will do. Thank you.
Adam Ho covers the Bears beat for us here on WGN Radio. And I think he's over there. Hey, Adam, this is John. Are you on? Yeah, I don't hear you. I'm going to put him. No, I can't put him on because he's not on.
Maybe he's busy.
Well, I know, but he just got done with that Bears press conference, and he was going to hop on with us on one of these switches here, and now he's not up on the switch. I have him call in, Ella.
You want to talk Bears to me?
Okay. And now covering the Bears, Violetta Podramedic. Violetta, what do you make of what sort of offense are we going to see from the Bears with this new coach?
It's a new team. It's a new year. We have a new coach, and we're looking up. We're going to start winning.
I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Thank you, Violetta.
Now more from Adam Hoag.
Violetta said that we're going to start winning and things are looking up, Adam Hoag. Do you agree with that?
Very, very optimistic and kind of hard to believe for the Chicago Bears. Hey, I will say this. It's hard to lose a press conference, but I think Matt Nagy won his today. Especially following John Fox, that wouldn't have been really hard to do. But enthusiastic, passionate, I can see why he clicked with Ryan Pace, the Bears general manager. They're both young, talk about football the same way, seem to be high character guys. So, you know, from today's standpoint, it's a press conference, not a football game, obviously, but a win for the Bears.
That's kind of what Kevin Powell said. So he and I were listening to it. We were all listening to it. We carried it here on the radio station. And Kevin said, wow, we now know more about this guy than we do John Fox, at least we like him better. Do you agree with that?
Well, I don't know if he has a pet monkey like we learned from John Fox a couple weeks ago. It took 3 years to get that out of him. Look, here's what I liked about Matt Nagy, my favorite part of today's press conference, I think, and if you're a Bears fan, you had to feel good about it. Saturday night, the Chiefs lose to the Titans. A lot of questions in that game about the play calling in the second half, specifically when they didn't run the ball a whole lot with an 18-point lead. Matt Nagy owned that today. I asked him directly, were you the one calling the plays? Because there seemed to be some confusion about that on Saturday, and he said, I called every single play in the second half. He used the word failure to describe his own handling of that situation on Saturday night, and then he owned it, said he's going to learn from it, promised that he would learn from it. And apparently that's exactly what he told Ryan Pace when he met with Pace the following morning, right after this game. And Ryan Pace loved that too. He owned it, and you got to like that. I mean, I don't think John Fox did that in the previous 3 years.
Yeah, but here's what I would like better. You more intelligently manage the clock and you win the game.
Well, that's fair. That's completely fair. But I will say, you know, Kyle Shanahan had the same problem in the Super Bowl last year when the Falcons lost to the Patriots, and he went out in San Francisco this year, and things are looking up with the 49ers. So I don't think it's completely fair to judge everything on one game, and you know, I at least like how he explained it today.
Yeah, I get that, and maybe you're right. The overall attitude is more important than one half, but don't you think he went to bed that night just hating the fact that not only did they lose, and he, you know, the after all the work they put in, as he said, you hate to lose, but he must have been wondering if that compromised his chances for this job that he wanted.
Yeah, and you know, I think he was asked that today too, and said, "Well, you're going to have to ask the general managers about that."
Right.
But, and Pace did talk about that. That it was something that he actually Pace admitted he had mixed emotions as he was watching that game, because he was in his hotel room Saturday night watching this game on TV, knowing he's interviewing. Well, yeah, knowing he was going to be interviewing Nagy, and he admitted that he had mixed emotions watching this, because that couldn't have felt good for him. Knowing that this was one of his top priorities as the guy he wanted to hire, but he, obviously Nagy aced the interview the next day when he explained and answers those questions.
Adam Hoge's on the phone line. We didn't drill down, as I could hear on that press conference, about why didn't he run more running plays in that game. We don't have an answer to that, do we, per se?
Well, I don't think he didn't really go into specifics on why he handled it the way he did. I know Andy Reid, the Chiefs head coach, kind of talked about that the defenses were dictating a little bit what they do. You know, every team in football these days have what they call run-pass options, and the quarterback's at the line of scrimmage and, you know, reading the defense and deciding whether or not they're going to run the ball or pass the ball in that moment. And I think that there's some times in games where the coach just needs to override that and say, hey, look, matter what, we're running the ball, even into an eight-man box.
He said, Adam, at the press conference, he was asked point blank, will you be calling all the plays? And he said, yes, absolutely, or something that unequivocal. Yep. Is that the way it usually goes? Does the head coach usually call all the plays?
Well, it depends. I mean, certainly in today's football, most of these head coaches that are offensive-driven, especially these ones that are getting paired with a quarterback, the way that Matt Nagy is with Mitch Trubisky, they do call the plays. We had this with Mark Trestman here in Chicago a few years ago, and I think it brings up fair questions. For a guy who's never coached, never been a head coach before, never handled clock management, when to challenge a play, all these things, there's a lot that happens within a football game, situational football, as coaches like to call it, to add on play calling responsibilities, it's going to be a huge test. And we're going to be watching that closely, obviously, next season when the games come around, because he's going to be doing all this for the first time. And when it comes to play calling, he's only done this for six games so far. So he's going to be pretty green when it comes to both of these parts, and he's going to have a lot on his plate.
Maybe next year is going to be a little deja vu all over again, in that this year we saw a quarterback learn on the job.
Mm-hmm.
Next year we're going to see a head coach kind of learn on the job. And hopefully, let's end it on this. If I were optimistic, I'd say we'd see as much progress with the head coach as we saw with the quarterback. Were you pleased with the place that Trubisky was in at the end of the season?
Yeah, I think overall I saw more good than bad. I would have liked to see more good than I did.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, the situation he was in with injuries across the offensive line late in the year, really at no point having any wide receivers,
no.
I think there are enough fair excuses on the table to say, all right, if you work all that out and he takes a huge step forward in the offseason, it should look better. But I think we're all in agreement that we need to see a significant jump forward early next season.
Hey, I'm a big fan, Adam. You sound great whenever I hear you, certainly on weekends and other times during the week as well. Thanks for jumping in with us today.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that.
That's Adam Hoge. He covers the Bears for us on GN.
All of us. Online.
Station WGN.
On demand.
WGNradio.com.
On demand.
If you're looking to purchase a home or refinance the one you have, I strongly recommend calling David Hochberg, Vice President of Lending at Pearl Mortgage. Hey, it's Steve Cochran. David's the most honest and trustworthy lender I've ever met. I called David when I considered refinancing. He answered my questions, gave me great advice, helped me figure out the refinance that I needed to do. My sister purchased a home. David secured her an amazingly low rate, completed her loan in less than a couple of weeks. He also supports a number of local charities that I also lend time to, and that's one of the things we bond over. There's Gilda's Club, Rags of Honor, Associated Firefighters of Illinois, and the Illinois Association of Police Chiefs. Look, if you want the same outstanding service my family gets on your next mortgage, call David Hochberg, 312-751-1333, or visit WGNDavid.com. I trust David with my money and my family's as well. David helped me, my sister, thousands of WGN listeners, but he can't help you if you don't call. Pearl Mortgage and Equal Housing Lender, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, 4358, RMLA NMLS 19186, David Hochberg, 312-751-1333.
Thank you.
Come to the Sprint store in Hyde Park, 1406 East 53rd Street on Saturday, January 13th from 1 to 3 p.m. to meet WGN sports anchor Kevin Powell. Come talk sports with Kevin. Qualify to win a special gift. Learn how you can switch to Sprint and get the best price for unlimited. Sprint works for me.
With PatriotSoftware.com, accounting and payroll, keep your time and money.
Mike Cappell here, serial entrepreneur. Doing payroll is no longer a headache for our customer, Jeff.
I've used various payroll providers in the past, and none can hold a candle to Patriot Software. Their software is ridiculously easy to use. The support staff is knowledgeable and courteous. I am very excited that Patriot Software files my tax forms for me, not just providing the forms like other payroll companies do. As a business owner, managing payroll has been a long-time headache that I no longer struggle with thanks to Patriot Software. I definitely rate your company 5 out of 5 stars.
Go to PatriotSoftware.com to get your payroll pricing for up to 100 employees. Use promo code RADIO and get 2 months of payroll processing free. That's PatriotSoftware.com.
With PatriotSoftware.com, accounting and payroll, keep your time and money.
Well, then let's do this. It just beeped 3 o'clock. I'm John Williams. Remember now, tomorrow, 1 to 3, we're at the Museum of Broadcast Communications for the SNL Experience. Rokan strolls in just a minute. Excuse me, I got to stop talking on the radio. Anna DeVlantis is here.
Hi, John.
Take it away, Anna. I'm going to stop.
We've got a lot coming up. We're going to talk about the immigration talks, the bipartisan immigration talks. When's the last time you saw something like that?
There's going to be a lot of love in that room.
Full display, a lot of love, as the president said, and full display democracy. And it was something to behold. So we'll talk about that. We've got Alderman O'Shea talking about the Get Behind the Vest campaign. We'll talk with Jared Payton also, and I heard you talking about Nagy, and much more on that, and much more to come. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Townstone Financial. Here's Kim Gordon.
Partly sunny, 34 at O'Hare. The man convicted of shooting and killing 16-year-old Blair Holt on a CTA bus in 2007 has been resentenced to 75 years in prison. Holt's mother, Annette, described what it was like to see her son's murderer.
We ignore him because he always has something he wants to try. You know, like today he wanted to try and get an appeal already, or he wanted to represent himself before the sentencing took place.
Michael Pace was originally sentenced to 100 years after pleading guilty, but an appeals court tossed the sentence, saying a previous judge made inappropriate comments during sentencing about Pace's character and Chicago gun violence. Two suburban legislators want to make it illegal for doctors to perform abortions in the case of a Down syndrome diagnosis.
The bill would make it illegal for a doctor to perform the procedure if she or he believes the mother wants it because the baby will likely be born with Down syndrome. Under the bill, the doctor would face the charges, not the mother. Sponsors say the bill is based on similar measures passed in Indiana, Ohio, North Dakota, and Louisiana. Abortion could be a key issue in this year's Republican gubernatorial primary. Steve Bertrand, WGN News.
A remarkable White House gathering today. President Trump and a bipartisan group of lawmakers discussing immigration reform aimed at protecting the Dreamers in exchange for border wall funds. Mr. Trump hoping for a more complete agreement soon after.
Once we get DACA done, if it's done properly with, you know, security and everything else, if it's done properly, we have taken a big chunk of comprehensive out of the negotiation, and I don't think it's going to be that complicated.
Democrats say attaching the wall to the DACA bill is a non-starter. Former Arizona Sheriff Joe Arpaio plans to run for the U.S. Senate seat now held by Jeff Flake. The 85-year-old is a close ally of President Trump and tweeted today he's seeking the post to support the agenda and policies of the president. Arpaio was spared a possible jail sentence last year when Trump pardoned his conviction for disobeying a judge's order in an immigration case. State lawmakers had lots of questions today on the deadly Legionnaires outbreak at the Quincy Veterans Home that killed 13 people since 2015. Illinois Department of Veteran Affairs Director Erica Jeffrey says there have been suggestions to move residents out of the home, but that poses problems, especially for those with dementia.
It's a tremendous risk to a population like this to consider moving them out of their home. It's just that. It's their home. And to ask people to move without a plan of when they might be able to come back was just not something that we wanted our veterans to endure.
Last week, the CDC declared in a report that eliminating the bacteria from the home's water is unlikely. The Museum of Science and Industry and the Chicago History Museum are asking the Chicago Park District for approval to increase admission fees. If approved by the board tomorrow, the new prices will go into effect next month. And now with your WGN Neighborhood News, if you're looking for something to do with your little ones that aren't in school during these cold, wintry days, Legoland in Schaumburg is offering toddler time on Tuesdays through the end of the month. The second floor will open from 10 to noon with reduced admission. And now WGN Sports, here's Kevin Powell.
Thank you, Kim. Good afternoon. Big day at Halas Hall. New head coach Matt Nagy met with the media for nearly an hour. He thanked the Bears, the Kansas City Chiefs, and got emotional addressing his family.
Go Bears? Yeah. Is it Dub Bears? Right? Dub Bears? Yeah. All right, good. I love you guys. And then to my beautiful wife. She's my rock. This is why I'm here. This right here is why we do it.
Nagy says he will.
Excuse me.
Yes, Rokan.
Yes, I thought you might. Is it Go Bears?
Yeah,
a little condescending to start. You better. He's gonna have to win some hearts and minds here.
You know, he does seem a lot more relatable. Like, I feel like we learned more about him in this 45-minute press conference than we did with John Fox. You know, in 3 years, he just seems a lot more personable than John Fox.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad he's. You know, he loves his wife, and he's got. It's all good. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Here's what we need. Go Bears.
Victories.
This is a cornerstone. I want you to just quote this.
Okay.
Quote Ed Obradovich. This is a cornerstone franchise of the National Football League.
Cornerstone franchise. Can you spell franchise, please?
The CH.
Okay.
And that's how you, and as such, the traditions of the NFL and the traditions of the Chicago Bears are sacrosanct here.
No question.
So Go Bears, learn the T formation song and all that.
Yes.
And still thank your wife.
And still thank
your
wife.
Thank your wife. Yeah, whatever. Okay, yeah. I'll let you know when I care about that. But I want winning.
This is his high school sweetheart.
Okay, great.
With her from when he was a realtor 10 years ago and he built up this career.
And she stuck with him, which by the way, I think is great.
Under six when he chose to be an assistant for making no dough.
Well, then maybe Tom Dart should be the coach of the Bears.
I vote for him.
All right. Back to sports.
Family man. You want a family man? You got one.
The family man, Matt Nagy, says he will call the offensive plays. On the defensive side of the ball, he and general manager Ryan Pace now get to work on rounding out the coaching staff. Nagy says he's talked with defensive coordinator Vic Fangio, but no word on if he'll be back next season.
Oh, good.
WDGNradio.com/Bears for more coverage, and we'll have more on this throughout the afternoon. Defenseman Brent Seabrook is a healthy scratch tonight when the Blackhawks visit the Ottawa Senators. Seabrook's averaging 20 minutes of ice time per game, his lowest average of his career. Faceoff is at 6:30. Chris Bowden with the pregame at 6 here on WGN. The Bulls are off until tomorrow, but good news regarding Zach LaVine. The guard will make his Bulls debut on Saturday against the Pistons, 11 months after surgery to repair a torn ACL. LaVine was brought over in the Jimmy Butler trade. And John Gruden introduced today as the new head coach of the Oakland Raiders. Kevin Powell, WGN Sports.
Your money, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
1-877 cards for kids, KARS cards for kids. 1-877 cards for kids. Donate your card today.
1-877 cards for kids, KARS cards for kids. 1-877 cards for kids. Donate your card today.
To learn more about our programs and to donate, go to cardsforkids.com. That's cards with a K. Pickup is quick and easy. You'll also get a vacation voucher and maximum tax deduction.
1-877 cards for kids. KARS cards for kids. 1-877 cards for kids. Donate your card today.
Also accepting boats, motorcycles, RVs, and real estate donations.
Hello, Chicago. My name is Jeff from CatSpotLitter.com. Is a cat a part of your family? If so, please listen up. I have a brand new cat litter made from real coconut. Did you know every year 8 billion pounds of toxic clumping clay litter gets put in a landfill? Well, it does. That's why I created Cat Spot Litter. It's 100% organic, all natural, dust-free, lightweight coconut cat litter. Well, here's a good New Year's resolution. Think healthier. For you, your pet, and our planet. With Cat Spot Litter, when your cat's done with it, recycle it. Use it in your yard, flower bed, or your compost pile. Folks, I just want you to give it a try. We offer a money-back guarantee. Just go to catspotlitter.com. That's catspot, S-P-O-T. Please use promo code COCONUT for 15% off your first order. That's COCONUT. I appreciate you listening.
Your money on WGN. The Dow closed up 102 points today. NASDAQ up 6. The S&P 500 up 3. Crude oil up $1.19 at $62.92. Gold down 5 points. Corn and wheat both up today. Soybeans down. Cattle prices ended higher. Hog futures ended lower at the Merck. WGN traffic, Violetta Padromedic.
Thank you, Kim. Traffic is sponsored by Extragen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. The Eden, 16 minutes between Lake Hook Road and the Junction. Inbound Kennedy's 25 minutes O'Hare to downtown, 17 minutes on the flip. Inbound Eisenhower's 42 minutes Thorndale to the old post office, just 22 minutes outbound. Over on the Stevenson, 29 minutes from 355 to Lakeshore Drive, 35 minutes out. And the Dan Ryan's 23 minutes 95th to the Burns Circle, 20 minutes outbound. Are you ready for a bad cold and flu season? A cold is a cold, but the flu brings fever. Be prepared with the Extragen Temporal Scanner Thermometer, backed by medical professionals everywhere. And for traffic on the 7s or 8s or anytime on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app. Approved by Team Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. I'm Violetta Padromedic in WGN Traffic Central.
And now the WGN forecast. Here's meteorologist Tom Skilling.
And Kim, the warm-up is to pick up steam in coming days. Chicagoans are in for a taste of nearly spring-like temperatures as ratings surge to 50 tomorrow and 56 on Thursday. The mild air will be growing moister with time, and this increases the prospect for more clouds and also a little drizzle or light rain at times. A big Arctic outbreak, though, hits on Thursday night, Friday, and the weekend will be cold, as will early next week, but there's new warming expected later next week. Tonight, mostly cloudy with haze and fog continuing. Some drizzle possible amid the strengthening southerly winds of late tonight. Low temperatures 36. Wednesday, cloudy, becoming windy and milder. Some sprinkles or a bit of drizzle possible at times. High 50. Wednesday night and Thursday, cloudy, quite windy, hazy, and unseasonably mild. Some patchy drizzle or light rain at times. Increasing in frequency Thursday afternoon. Low tomorrow night with nearly steady temperatures around 48. Thursday's high at 56, but turning colder later in the day. And Friday, mostly cloudy, windy, much cooler. Some flurries, and there may be lake effect snow that develops later in the day and continues near Lake Michigan on Saturday. Friday's high expected only at 30 and only 21 on Saturday. From the WGN Weather Center, I'm Tom Skilling. Kim, back to you.
Thanks, Tom. Right now we have O'Hare 35, Midway 33, Highland Park 36. The wind's blowing from the south at 6 miles an hour. The barometer steady along the lakefront 32. I'm Kim Gordon in the WGN newsroom, ready to join the conversation live whenever a story changes on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Yes, it's the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Mm-hmm. Happy Tuesday to everybody.
Thank you. Thank you. And we are we're off for another day of broadcast insolence.
Yes, we are.
And we're going to talk to Jared Payton coming up in just a few minutes. He was at the press conference today with Don't Call Me Nagy, Call Me Nagy. And I don't know why we would do that.
We're supposed to sort that out, though, today.
Coach, listen, as soon as he starts winning, I'll forgive everything. But right now, I'm still getting over. Let me tell you, I'm still getting over Trestman. I haven't even gotten over Trestman yet, let alone Fox.
Well, I was at the debut news conference for Trestman, and I remember thinking that there was a lot of lack of enthusiasm then. And then the energy in the room was pretty, it was lacking, and his energy seemed to be lacking. Remember? And we thought, no, this is a really smart guy. Let's think beyond that.
Well, you see, that was the problem. The book on him was, well, he's a lawyer, you know. Well, good. Well, if I need to do a contract or I have a real estate closing ahead of me, I'll call it.
That's the guy you thought he was.
He was the forward-thinking, progressive offensive mind that was going to change the way the Bears' offense operates and ascend to the top of the league in the offensive rankings, and it was a complete disaster. That's why it's really hard to get excited about this. I think for the most part, he seemed pretty likable. It's like, okay, he knows how to work with quarterbacks, but it's just, I think all of us are sitting here like, win a few games.
Which,
you know,
proves the point that attitude is what needs to change.
Well, I don't mind a badass. I kind of like that a little bit. I want a guy who's going to get in there, especially, and we were talking about this with OB. Yeah. We'll talk about this with Jared in just a few minutes. But these guys were really, really, really in bad shape in terms of their discipline, their line discipline and stuff like that. They weren't paying attention. And John Fox didn't seem to care anymore. I mean, I think he couldn't wait to get out of town. He knew it was over, and I don't think they were enforcing any kind of discipline on that team in terms of you know, being, I think, the most basic football dynamics that they teach at the high school level, right? About, you know, waiting for understanding the snap count, repeating it to yourself coming out of the huddle, knowing what you're doing, waiting for this to move. And I know it's more complicated in the NFL, but they were making, you know, you cannot start off with 5-yard penalties on first down. You know, and you can't. And how many times did Tariq Cohen get called back for simple moments in which, you know, there was a holding that shouldn't have been, or an illegal block in the back? I mean, those kinds of things. And if this guy can enforce that would be a really good step in the right direction. And I'm all for that. But this whole idea. But you got to be. He's got such an impossible job ahead of him to win over Chicago Bears fans. Yeah. He's got to bleed blue and orange right now.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is developing Mitch Trubisky. For Ryan Pace, he's got to give him tools to work with, and for Matt.